I remember my teacher asked me, Brian, what's the I before E rule? I before E, always. What are you, an idiot, Brian? Apparently. So she explains it. No, Brian, it's I before E, except after C. And when sounding like A is a neighbor in way. And on weekends and holidays and all throughout May. And you'll always be wrong no matter what you say. Oh, that's a hard rule. That's a rough rule. Plurals were hard, too. Brian, how do you make a word a plural? You put an S. You put an S at the end of it. When? On weekends and holidays. No, Brian. No, let me show you. So she asked this kid who knew everything, Irwin, what is he plural for ox? Oxen. The farmer used his oxen. Brian, what? Brian, what's the plural for box? Boxing. I bought 2 boxing of donuts. Oh, no, Brian, no. Let's try another one. Irwin, what is he plural for goose? Geese. I saw a flock of geese. Brian, what? Brian, what's the plural for moose? Moosin'. I saw a flock of moosin'. There are many of them, many much moosin'. Out in the woods, in the wood is, in the woods in. The meat's wanting the food, food is to eating is it. The meat's wanting the food and in the wooding in is it. In the food in the wooding is it. Brian. You're an imbecile.
So that goes on. If you've never heard Brian Regan, Griffin actually from that started listening to a lot of Brian Regan clips. We have on the line with us Rich Lenkov. I apologize. I'm sort of on a high today of my son winning the school-wide spelling bee. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I was. Were you a good speller? Are you a good speller?
I pride myself on my excellent spelling, yes, for sure.
Well, and then can you imagine now, like, could you imagine growing up when everything has spell check? We didn't grow up like that. You had to look it up.
The spell check was spell it right or your teacher smacked you in the face.
Yeah. Well, it was, well, that's a rough teacher you've got there. I don't, was it with an eraser or an actual upside of the head? Or are these flashbacks you're having that are different?
It was with a ruler.
Oh, my, Catholic school?
No, Jewish school.
What? Where did you grow up?
It's a rough upbringing. There was some prison involved. It was tough.
School, prison, whatever. Where did you grow up, Attorney Lenkov?
I actually grew up much like perhaps our next president. I grew up in Canada. I grew up in Montreal.
Oh, interesting. I love your segue because today I believe there's a piece in the New York Times that if you are a strict constitutionalist, Ted Cruz is not eligible to run for president of the United States.
Yeah, we're actually going to cover that on Legal Face-Off, whether the natural born citizen language of the Constitution means that you actually have to be born in the U.S. or not. It hasn't been litigated really before. Lots of constitutional scholars say that Ted Cruz, because he was born to an American mother, he is eligible. Others say that it means you have to be literally born on U.S. soil. So,
where would the definition of natural born citizen be found?
It's nowhere. That's why it's interesting. I mean, it's written that way in the Constitution, but it's been the subject of some litigation, not exactly on this point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really a case of first impression for the Supreme Court. So you have to, like many things in the Constitution, interpret what the framers intended.
Well, I believe, I could be wrong, and I'm not trying to quiz you by any means. I believe, wasn't John McCain someone who was also born like on a military base, perhaps? And that came up during one of his primaries, I think.
Yeah, he was born on a military base overseas, and it wasn't obviously a huge issue in that election. People took it for granted that he was a natural born citizen. So
yeah, how do you challenge? How do you challenge somebody whose parents, whose dad was in the military, and say, "Well, you weren't born here." That would kind of be ridiculous. I would think that, how do you decide? Well, if you're military serving somewhere, then it's okay if you're not born on American soil. But just because your mom was traveling, why was she in Canada? Were they living in Canada? His parents?
His dad was a Cuban immigrant, and his mother, they were living in, I think it was Manitoba or Alberta at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved to the U.S.
Do you know if she was an American citizen that was living in Canada, or did she have dual citizenship?
She was born in Delaware.
Okay.
So she was an American citizen living in Canada.
Interesting. All right. Well, it's not for us to decide. But again, you said you'd be talking about that on Legal Face Off with your less significant other, Jason Whiteside. Yes.
Always less significant, always less worthy of attention. That would be Jason Whiteside for sure.
That's funny. So we have the whether it's a constitutional, the legality of it, the viability. Did you watch the State of the Union address tonight?
I did. I thought it was a pretty good performance. But yeah, I did watch it. Did you watch it? Did you cover that?
The whole thing. No, we didn't cover it too much. I did wonder about the justices. Chief Justice Roberts was there, as were Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Sotomayor. I was wondering, I don't know, did you notice that the conservative justices were not there?
Well, Kennedy was there.
Yes.
Who is a swing probably vote. A little more conservative. I'm trying to think. Alito wasn't there.
Thomas was not there.
Thomas was not there. So, yeah, they probably maybe they decided to forego his last address as a protest.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit strange. It just struck me. I don't know if that's considered disrespectful. I do know that it was considered bad performance on his part when he kind of went after them about the corporations are people and the campaign finance decision they made, right?
Yeah, well, remember Alito a couple of years ago made that sort of gesture saying, and he mouthed the words, if not true, which was really taken as bad protocol for a justice. Roberts was there. He's certainly a conservative. I don't know. I don't really know I think they all have the choice to come or not, right?
Right. Yeah, I guess. And that was a comment. I heard someone say that the Supreme Court has tended to not rule in his favor. I've found that it's been sort of it depends on the legality of what they're talking about, I know that people were upset about Hobby Lobby and those decisions about birth control. They did, rule on the side of Hobby Lobby and groups that did not want to provide birth control. But on the other hand, didn't they uphold Obamacare?
They did on at least two occasions, maybe three times they upheld Obamacare. I don't think that this court has been, at least during the term of Obama, has been strictly conservative. There are many examples of, Roberts writing decisions that or writing a majority opinion decisions that could be interpreted as very liberal. You could pretty much count on Alito, Thomas, and Scalia,
mm-hmm.
Pretty much against everything that Obama stands for. But, Roberts has written some surprising decisions. Kennedy's been a swing vote, as you mentioned, in a lot of decisions. So, yeah, I don't think they have been maybe as conservative as they've been perceived.
Do you attribute that to being anti-Obama or anti-Democrat, Democrat sort of leanings?
What people perceive as a Republican vote is not always a conservative vote. Those two things are often different when it comes to Supreme Court cases. When you look at, Bush second, You know, he was a Republican, but yet he was responsible for some decisions that true conservatives feel were ridiculous. I mean, he spent a lot. He went over budget. And that translated into a lot of Supreme Court decisions. So I don't know. I mean, if you, you know, if you really are a follower of the Supreme Court, you hope that they, and even if you're not, you hope that they don't, you know, that they're not a partisan body. There are certainly some decisions that you know, it's hard to believe that politics didn't play a role mm-hmm. in some of it. But for the most part, I think that they rule based on the law and the evidence. They don't let politics come into it too much.
Well, I mean, but that being said, they never, you know, they seem to take all of that information and still consistently vote against things that might be part of the Obama administration's favorite projects. Whereas Roberts really does seem to go this, you know, really follow the legal path, whether it's Republican or Democrat.
Yeah, I mean, I think Roberts, you know, pretty much calls it like he sees it. I mean, if, you know, you're a Republican, there are examples of decisions that Roberts has written the majority in that you would scratch your head and think, you know, who appointed this guy, a Democrat or a Republican?
And that's the way it should be. That's the way you would hope your Chief Justice would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case with Scalia, Alito, and Thomas. I mean, you'd be very hard-pressed to find decisions in which they agreed with the Obama, you know, administration on really any issue. They're pretty solid, you know, pretty solid conservative votes, the same way, you know, Kagan and Sotomayor and some of the more liberal justices are pretty, you know, pretty solid liberal votes.
Now, we are in Obama's last year of the presidency, President Obama's last year. What happens as far as appointing another Supreme Court justice? Do you think he would do it, you know, how does this timeline work in case Ruth Bader Ginsburg wants to step down or anybody else for that matter? Do you have any thoughts on what might happen in the next year before the next president is sworn into office?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we saw tonight Ginsburg is certainly older, but she's holding up pretty good. Kennedy also is getting up there in age. You know, that's one of the great mysteries of American politics is whether these justices decide to retire based on, you know, terms of presidency. You always figure that does play a role. Stephen Breyer is, you know, another candidate. He's getting up there in age. Who knows? I mean, if you're Ginsburg, do you decide to retire before the end of Obama's term to ensure that he gets the right to appoint her successor? Hopefully, you know, if you're her, hopefully someone who is liberal versus waiting for potentially a Trump or a Republican president.
Right.
Who knows? I mean, I don't. You would hope that politics doesn't play into that, but I'm sure it does.
Oh, absolutely. We are hanging out with attorney Rich Lenkov from WGN Plus's Legal Face Off. He lets Jason Whiteside tag along for some fun. Am I going too hard after him? Is that was that too much? Was that?
Yeah, that has even scratched the surface of how much we need to pick on Whiteside all the time. He can handle it. He can handle it for sure.
We'll think of some more stuff. We are when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Making of a Murderer. And I've watched a few episodes. I want to get your thoughts on that because it just seems to be taking social media by storm. And I'm curious about why that is. More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. We only have a couple more minutes with attorney Rich Lenkov. You can catch him on WGN Plus, Legal Face-Off with that other guy. And Jason Whiteside. We'll call him Jason Whiteside because that's his name. Rich, how many episodes of Making of a Murderer have you seen?
I thought the puffiness and baggy eyes were another shot at Jason Whiteside for a second. I got lost.
He's got a sky cap for those things. What are your thoughts of Making of a Murderer and the sort of, I guess, the grasp it seems to have on people's attention right now?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It has really sort of caught fire. I don't know why. It's just one of those things that people are fascinated. I mean, you know, true crime is always fascinating to people. this story just because of how powerful it is. You haven't finished it, so I don't want to give away too much, but
I Googled really it. I kind of was bored. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah. You were bored?
I was a little bored. I mean, I think anytime someone says, yeah, I threw a cat in the fire, I was hanging around with the wrong people. Yeah, I'm kind of done. I know what kind of people you got to hang out where you go, I'm going to torture this innocent animal. I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of people think that he should have been, thrown in jail for 18 years just for the cat.
I get that. Yes. I mean, that being said, I mean, there's so many bizarre things. One of them being the sketch artist who just happened to have a drawing that he said was based on the witness who had been beaten, looked exactly like his, what do you call the cards with their mugshots?
Yeah.
I mean, they had a moment where they kind of overlaid it and it matched pretty perfectly. And he said, no, I had never seen his photo. That was based entirely on the witness reports.
That only that guy, and then the guy he frames his sketch of,
yes,
of Avery. I mean, literally the first time that I can remember a guy literally framing a frame.
Yeah.
He framed the person he framed.
I hadn't thought of the poetic sort of bizarreness of it.
Framing a framing. That always scratches the surface that these series covers and bizarre things that the government did, that the state did. There's so many examples of questionable tactics. Most people go so far as calling it framing this guy. I mean, if you watch the show, there are, four or five things that you just have to sort of scream at the TV and say, how could that happen?
Right. I agree.
On the other hand, at the end of the day, the guy had a trial. He was
twice. But the thing is, he had one trial where he was convicted, and then DNA evidence cleared him 18 years later. And then the next time, it is bizarre. I mean, the key in his bedroom under his slippers. I didn't understand the police officer's sort of description of how it was there, and then it wasn't there, and then it was there. I mean, that seemed dodgy. The personal sort of malice they seem to have for him really came through. But on the other hand, did you get a feeling, and I think a lot of people should get this feeling, the people who do the documentary also can edit it in any sort of tone they want.
Yeah, so they left out, most people know by now that they left out some evidence that is pretty damaging to Avery's case. The most glaring example being that, he was stalking the victim. I mean, the documentary shows no relationship between them beforehand. In fact, she was a photographer for Auto Trader, and he had called and asked for her specifically on prior occasions. He called her cell phone on many occasions before that, I think three occasions. And at one point, he *67 his phone so that it would come out. It wouldn't show up.
That's significant information.
Weird. And it's funny too how many people are now lawyers, by the way, and especially lawyers on Twitter. That's a little weird for me that everyone's like, "Yeah, this is what you got to figure that out."
I agree.
Yes.
Well, before
they're calling it stock. Slacktivist, right? A lot of
slacktivist. Did you say slacktivist? I kind of love that.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that yet. Before I let you go, I do, because I mentioned this to Craig, and I don't know if he passed it along to you. I don't know why this has gripped everyone's attention and the Memphis 3 did not, which I thought was, and it's a shorter documentary. There are several of them. There was one, I think, on one of the network, like HBO. I know Johnny Depp produced one. There were three teenagers who were convicted of the murder of three young boys. And they were not exonerated. They took a plea deal that basically said that the state wasn't saying that they weren't guilty, but that they could go now. The Alberts plea?
Yeah, it was, you're talking about the West Memphis 3. I mean, the reason I think that it's different is because that was, just before social media, just before the internet really blew up. I mean, you're talking 20 years ago. I think if that case happened today, or even the documentary aired today, it would capture a lot of people's attention. But yeah, really similar. I mean, in that case, They served 18 years, just like Avery did.
Yeah, Damien Echols was on death row. And yeah. And he wrote a short piece. People have been asking him if he watched it. And he's like, I lived it. I'm not going to watch it. And, you know, but people should know this is happening in our country where this is possible.
Yeah. And interestingly, in that case, part of their deal was that they would give up the right to sue the state civilly for wrongful conviction. So,
yeah,
I mean, those guys, you know, obviously very tough situation for them. I don't know if they, in that case they ever found who really did. I don't think so, right?
I don't think they have. It's, okay, but before, one more thing before we go. That was sort of the most, so far to me, the most infuriating thing was that the man who was responsible for attacking the woman that, that Stephen Avery was in prison for, he attacked other women in, during the time that that he was not in jail.
Yeah, you know, when they could have locked up the really the real bad guy, he was out doing this to other people. So yeah. it makes it all that worse. Yeah, all the worse.
Yeah, there's so many things. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I guess it's a little compelling, but I don't. I'm just the level to which people are obsessed with it is strange to me. I think we're doing drinks this weekend. Let's go out. Let's go hang out.
Sure. Definitely.
Excellent. By the way, I'm going to invite you to Sketchfest. That's what I'm going to do this weekend too. At night, they've got some great shows coming up. We're going to have some of the groups in our studio. But until then, Rich, I will see you soon, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Patty. Appreciate it.
Of course. And everyone should tune in to WGN Plus for Legal Face-Off with Rich Lenkov and, you know, the guy we call Jason Whiteside.